Jill Kerr-Conway grew up on a sheep station in New South Wales, Australia. In 1960, when she was 25, she left Australia for graduate school in the United States. Conway became a feminist historian and the first woman president of Smith College in Massachusetts, one of the largest women's colleges in the world. Conway recounts her childhood and the years leading up to her departure for the U.S. in her memoir, The Road from Corain. Corain was the name of her father's ranch, established on 30,000 acres of grassland. I wanted to have a sense of the place where Conway was from, so I asked her if she would describe the landscape.
Oh, yes, with pleasure. If you look at a map of Australia and draw a line 500 miles due west of Sydney, you come to an area that is just empty. If it's a map that shows climate, it will show less than 10 inches annual rainfall. It is totally devoid of trees, except where there's a submerged stream that produces a few straggly clumps of trees. Absolutely flat, very beautiful in colors, wonderful scarlet soil, and usually grass that is burnt to a beautiful gold and silver color by the heat of the sun, and an enormous sky.
So you grew up in a very isolated setting.
Totally. Our next-door neighbors were, about 50 miles away on one side about 20 miles another and 10 or 12 in another direction.
Your first schooling was through a correspondence course.
Yes, it was. My mother thought I could do two years in one, and she told the correspondence school that, but they thought there were two children on the place, so they sent the first lesson of the first grade and the first lesson of the second grade and continued in installments all the way through the year. It wasn't clear to me that it was work of a different degree of difficulty, so we didn't know until the end of the year.
I love what you say about studying alone in isolation, that you were introduced to study as a leisure time activity. It sounds like you never really grew to dislike education in the way that so many children who go to schools do.
Well, I think that's true. You know, so much time is taken in school with getting children to sit down at the same time or stand up at the same time or concentrate on the same thing. And for me, it was sheer pleasure. I was doing hard physical labor on the sheep station, and I worked at that 4 days a week. And on the fifth day, on Friday, I got to sit down and do my school, and it was such a treat because I'd be given my own pot of tea, and my Friday was a baking day, so there would be great smells of fresh baked scones and cookies coming from the kitchen, and I felt totally indulged, and I've never felt about learning any other way.
Were you sure that you would go to college?
It was very clear in my family, because my mother was such a feminist, that I would. And interestingly, the stereotypes of gender worked in my favor in my family, because it was expected that my brothers would probably not go to university, and would, since our father was a rancher, that they would take up life on the land too, and that meant that they would begin that right after school.
You went to the University of Sydney first, yes?
Yes, I did.
And then you thought about what to do next. You decided you didn't want to go to school in England because you'd feel like a colonial there. You applied to Harvard and started living in the United States. Did you find that there were more opportunities for women?
Oh, goodness, yes. Well, I arrived at the Harvard Graduate School. I lived in the graduate residence where there were several hundred other women all getting PhDs and all enormously bright and interesting people drawn from all over the world. And I quickly encountered a set of strong and powerful women's institutions in this country, which simply didn't exist in the Australia of my day. And I found a director of my graduate studies who regularly told his students that the contribution of women to American intellectual life was as important as men's, and handed out lists of women whose lives needed to be studied and whose intellectual histories needed to be written and so forth. That was just a new world for me.
What set you in the direction of being a college administrator, first a vice president at the University of Toronto, then the first woman president at Smith?
Well, I was a woman who had the good fortune, I think, to be born at the right time. I was just finished my PhD and beginning life as a professional historian just at the point when there was an enormous expansion of higher education in the United States and Canada. And I went to Canada with my husband, who was taking part in planning and building a new university in Toronto. And myself joined the history department at the University of Toronto. And in the process, I suddenly discovered one day that although I had joined the history department at the University of Toronto with a group of young men, all trained in American doctoral programs like me, I was the only one who wasn't being promoted, and I found that I was also being quite severely discriminated against in my salary. And so I just got in a rage and went and confronted the department chairman and the dean with this information. And they very quickly rectified the situation. But when I was finished, I realized that there were loads of other women faculty who had parents or children to support and were in much more jeopardy protesting such things than I. So I began organizing the women faculty. And before I knew it, I was in a leadership role that I just stumbled into. And very shortly thereafter, there was a change in the university administration, and I sort of had to put up or shut up, and so I accepted a position as one of the university vice presidents. And so I sort of backed into it and then found out I really loved it.
Mm-hmm. You spent 10 years yes. as the president of Smith College.
Yes.
The first woman president of Smith
yes,
College, which is
right.
a women's school. Now that women are admitted to top colleges around the country, do you think that there still is a need for women's colleges?
Oh, absolutely. First of all, you have to remember that women's colleges in this country are probably the only ones that have a consistent record of having co-educational faculties. They usually have roughly 50-50, and most of the institutions that are co-educational in their student bodies have a long way to go in terms of equal recruitment of women faculty and administrators. One learns to take one's place as an intellect and a politically active person in a society in which all the roles of leadership are open to women. And once you learn that and internalize it, you're never phased again.
Did you ever go through days where you'd think to yourself, how did I end up the president of a college? After all, I started in this correspondence school.
Often, I must say, I think that I was very fortunate in that early education because it gave me a very strong sense that I could educate myself, learn any task that I set out on. And so I wasn't fazed by all the new skills I had to learn at different stages in life. But certainly, I was often amused by that.
When was the last time you returned to Corrine, the area where you grew up in?
I took my husband there about 4 years ago. He was absolutely overwhelmed by the isolation and the emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
The house where I grew up is now empty. The ranch is part of a much larger property. So that it was both very lovely to see that landscape again and very poignant to see this world my parents had built now in process of decay.
In the process of decay?
Yes, because the house isn't lived in any longer, and the garden, which I describe in my book, is gone. But as I also say, the land renews itself and is as beautiful as ever.
I want to thank you very much for telling us a little bit about your life. Thank you.
A pleasure.